4, Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Joe Palca reporting.
Here we are voting for a ceasefire that could have saved lives days ago.
U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Nikki Haley, as the U.N. Security Council unanimously demanded Saturday that all parties in Syria implement a nationwide ceasefire for at least 30 days and lift sieges on areas including eastern Ghouta. The International Rescue Committee reports that the approval for the ceasefire must be followed by steps on the ground.
It's still too early to judge whether there's any improvements on the ground. There have been reports that the bombardments have continued. I know, speaking to colleagues inside eastern Ghouta, that they are living in constant fear and they're worried that the next bomb might hit their home and kill their family.
Paul Donahoe is a senior media officer, Middle East, for the International Rescue Committee. The IRC has been providing aid support for several medical facilities inside eastern Ghouta.
People are in a medical emergency right now. We know that, unfortunately, more than a dozen hospitals seem to have been hit in the last week and put out of action. And you can just imagine the consequence of that for people who have been injured who are not able to receive medical treatment.
A video released by the Syrian Civil Defense, a group of responders known as the White Helmets, is said to show an injured child being rescued from the rubble of a building hit by shelling on Sunday. This one day into the ceasefire. The Central Committee of China's Communist Party has proposed removing term limits for the country's president and vice president from the Constitution, according to a report by the official Xinhua news agency. Now, the change would allow Chinese President Xi Jinping to remain in office beyond 2023. He has been president since 2013. This is VOA News. With a symphony orchestra, an explosion of fireworks, and rousing cheers from observing thousands, the International Olympics Committee declared the 2018 Winter Games closed on Sunday, hailing the Pyeongchang Olympics as the Games of New Horizons. In his speech at the Games' closing ceremony, IOC President Thomas Bach praised North and South Korea for marching together during the opening ceremony.
With your joint march, you have shared your faith in a peaceful future with all of us. You have shown how sport brings people together in our very fragile world.
Bach handed the Olympic flag to the mayor of Beijing, which will host the next Winter Olympics in 2022. The Democratic minority on the U.S. House of Representatives Intelligence Committee on Saturday released a response to Republican charges that the FBI and Justice Department have abused the law in their investigation of possible ties between Russia and Donald Trump's 2016 presidential campaign. The Democrats' 10-page memo is partially redacted form, calls an earlier Republican version a transparent effort to undermine the various investigative processes already underway. The chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Republican Devin Nunes, commented on the memo last week.
We want it out because we think it is clear evidence that the Democrats are not only trying to cover this up, but they're also colluding with parts of the government to help cover this up.
The Republicans contend that the FISA warrant that allows the FBI to surveil Carter Page, a Trump campaign operative, was politically motivated. Well, one of the revelations of yesterday's Democratic memo is that the four judges on the FISA panel who allowed the surveillance were all Republican-appointed judges. President Donald Trump said he's asked the Pentagon to stage a military parade in the nation's capital on Veterans Day. The president said he might change his mind about the parade if it costs too much. His own budget director Mick Mulvaney estimated the cost at anywhere between $10 and $30 million. South Korean officials say the North is open to talks with the United States despite the latest bellicose announcements from Pyongyang. The South Korean presidential office said that the comment was made in a meeting between President Moon Jae-in and the North Korean delegation to the Winter Olympics, and that both sides agreed that the inter-Korean relations and North Korea-U.S. relations should go hand in hand. I'm Joe Palca, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
That Cameroon has never had a political change, and right now we are in a situation where the country is at the verge of implosion.
The Cameroonian main opposition party, the Social Democratic Front, or SDF, elect a new candidate for the 2018 presidential election.
I am ready to fight for this country in terms of peace, security, and I will work for education.
The presidential candidate for the Sierra Leonean opposition Revolutionary United Front Party says women can govern the country better.
This table outlines the activities to be implemented from now up to 21st May, when we are going to hold the tripartite elections. And tripartite elections, we are electing the state president.
And the Malawian Electoral Commission launches its timetable for the 2019 general election. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Cameroonian main opposition party, the Social Democratic Front, or SDF, has elected Joshua Nambangi Ossi as the candidate for the 2018 presidential election. Until his election, Ossi was the deputy chairman of the SDF and was the first Anglophone Cameroonian to serve as a parliamentarian in the commercial capital Douala. The election for the presidential nomination of the party came after John Fru-Indi, founder of the SDF party, announced he would not seek the nomination. Ossi is expected to face incumbent President Paul Biya in next year's presidential vote. To learn more about his nomination, I reached candidate Joshua Nambangi Ossi in Douala.
Obia has been on the table for 4 decades. I think the first and most important point is a new political offer. I think secondly, we need absolutely a generational change in our country. Finally, I think we have right now in power a regime that is born from the colonial era. And this is an offer that can cut off from that approach to start looking at indigenous ways of developing our country. To say that it is very important to understand that Cameroon has never had a political change. And right now we are in a situation where the country is at the verge of implosion. And as such, it is important to understand that this election is the last chance or the last hope for democratic transition to happen, and Cameroonians will have the choice either to go into a democratic transition or then pave the way for violent transition, which is the consequence when the democratic process is blocked for much too long.
Some Cameroonians have said that the lack of a coalition or an alliance in the opposition to join forces to challenge President Paul Biya has thwarted efforts to defeat him. What will you do differently that you think can help the SDF win the next presidential election?
If you look at electoral results, that position is not justified. We have open doors. We are open. We have coalitions before. Unfortunately, coalitions that have helped with the U.S. taking place, but we have open doors. But as soon as we see, as long as we see that the coalition will help bring positive change, we are ready to go into it. But we are a political force in place. We are not a political offer that has been invented in the last couple of weeks just for the sake of an election.
Will this be a big shoe to fill for John Fru-Indi, who was a founder of the party and who has led this party in several presidential elections? A big shoe to fill, don't you think?
Of course, it is a big shoe to fill, but it is not a fit. It is something that just happened overnight. The entire party has been working towards that for the past 25 years, and he remains the chairman of the party, and so he is still our party leader. We will benefit from his experience and leadership to go through this process. And he's leading us, and he's holding our hands towards this victory in October.
There's a crisis in the English-speaking part of Cameroon. What do you propose to resolve this crisis in the English parts of Cameroon?
The crisis is because the regime is unable to handle a problem of severe bad governance that brought about this issue. And today we know that the government of Cameroon is not willing to enter into any dialogue. They believe that they can solve the problem by selling tanks, by burning down villages, and so on. And so we've gone to the point where dialogue is gradually becoming impossible between the perpetrators of all of these violence. And so it is very important to understand that the only hope for dialogue to come back to the table is to renew the leadership of the country. And then come and solve that crucial fundamental issue about democratic nationalization that is on the table. The government doesn't understand that the only way that problem can be solved is through dialogue.
Joshua Nabangi Osi is the new presidential candidate for the Cameroonian opposition party, the Social Democratic Front, or SDF. He spoke with me from Douala. The presidential candidate for the Sierra Leonean Opposition Revolutionary United Front Party, or RUPF, says women can be better managers of the West African country. Ms. Jemba Gbandi Ngobe says she is the only Iron Lady on earth after demonstrating her leadership skills in the bush during the country's civil war. She also says the agenda of her campaign is education, infrastructural development, as well as to bolster the country's democracy. To learn more about her campaign regarding the upcoming March 7 polls, I reached Ms. Ngobe in the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown.
Well, I am finding it very difficult with my campaign. I'm going house to house campaign now, and my men are going out in the villages and the surrounding areas. The district head, we are going around.
Why are you finding things difficult? What is the problem?
Our problem is financial problem, but we are still campaigning. We are going house to house. We are using bikes to go all over.
So who is going to help with this financial situation? And you will not be able to reach everybody across the country before the elections then?
Yeah, that is the point. But I'm still doing it. I'm trying because I was expecting some money, but I did not receive it. But we are still doing it, house-to-house campaigning. Cannot reach to everybody, but we have men at the district headquarters. They are going all over with bikes, talking to the people. I go through the radio station. We bring democracy in Sierra Leone, but people do not want to know about this.
What are you telling the people of Sierra Leone to convince them to vote for you on March 7 in the presidential election?
I am telling the people in Sierra Leone that the people of Sierra Leone, they were the cause of the war. In 1991, everybody was anxious for war and war. So when the war came, they only take the blame on we. But we now the democracy has come. Everybody wants to enjoy, and they are enjoying. But they do not want to know about us, that we are the people who bring democracy into Sierra Leone. This is what I'm telling them, that they should forget about the war. They should know that we are here come with democracy in Sierra Leone.
But you've had President Ernest Bai Koroma, who has led the country on two consecutive terms. Sierra Leone for some time has been stable now. What should they expect from you if they elect you as their next president?
They expect me to come with better things, changes. Join him for more development. Where the development do not go, I will take it there.
So which places are you talking about?
Education, because we don't have quality education in Sierra Leone. That is one of the things we are finding it difficult. The literacy position is too high in Sierra Leone, and there is no compulsory education in Sierra Leone. Teachers are not well paid. So we don't have quality education. The health sector is not well done.
What makes you a better candidate than all the candidates vying for the presidential election?
What makes me different is because I am the one who bring the democracy in Sierra Leone. That makes me different because my party is transformed from military to political party. That makes me different.
What is your message to the people of Sierra Leone?
My message to the people of Sierra Leone is that I'm one of the signatories to the peace to Sierra Leone. I have worked for this peace. I have suffered for this peace. I went to ECOWAS to talk to the ECOWAS members. about the peace coming to Sierra Leone, how they could come with peace into Sierra Leone. I was the one who created that. I talked to the chairman of ECOWAS to explain to him that this is the way we can bring this peace to Sierra Leone. We have to go to table. The arm will not finish this war. So that is my message. And my message is that my party brought democracy into Sierra Leone, and I am ready to fight for this country in terms of peace, security. And I will work for education, health, agriculture.
Jemba Gbandi Ngobe is the presidential candidate for the Sierra Leonean Opposition Revolutionary United Front Party, or RUFP. She spoke with me from Freetown. The Malawian Electoral Commission has launched its timetable for the 2019 general election. The ceremony, which was held at the Bingu International Convention Center, was attended by civil society groups, political parties, and other stakeholders. During the launch, the electoral body presented measures it plans to implement in the run-up to the next year's poll. Opposition political parties accused the Electoral Commission of bias in favor of incumbent President Arthur Peter Mutharika, a charge the electoral body denies. For more about next year's vote, I read Sangwani Mwafulirwa, the spokesman for the Malawian Electoral Commission in the capital, Lilongwe.
We know that elections are a cycle, but it still has to come at a time whereby we have to go into the elections period. This is a period whereby we engage into the main activities in preparation for the elections. So we had to bring all the stakeholders together and brief them on how we have prepared for the elections. So this table outlines the activities to be implemented from now up to 21st May, when we are going to hold the tripartite elections. And tripartite elections, we are electing the state president, members of parliament, and also councillors who represent wards in the local government system.
And this will be in 2019, but looking at what you experienced in the last election, are there any improvements that the Electoral Commission will be looking at implementing during next year's elections?
What you should know about the elections is that they are dynamic. Each and every election is going to bring you its own unique challenges. So after elections, definitely you sit down and reflect on how you have performed and put in place measures to deter the recurrence of the challenges. So indeed, this has been an extensive process in Malawi of looking at how we conducted the elections in 2014 and how we can better prepare for the 2019 elections. A lot of resources, even time and human resources, have been invested in this process from the commission side, from the political side, and even the civil society. Quite a number of issues that have been put in place, and there are also a number of legal reforms that have been proposed. Unfortunately, on the other side, we haven't succeeded in pushing for the reforms in Parliament, but still we are eager that the administrative reforms that were put in place are going to provide a federal grant for the Malawi Electoral Commission and all stakeholders to have a successful and credible election in 2019.
Sangwani, the Electoral Commission has a new head, Madam Jane Ansah, a legal brain. But what should Malawians be looking up to in the next election under her leadership?
We not only have a new chairperson, but also have a new commission, which was appointed in 2015, replacing the old one. And good enough is that since the appointment, they have been part of the reforms process, and quite a number of things have put in place, measures to ensure that we deter the recurrence. Apart from that, they have overseen a number of by-elections, which have provided a good ground for protesting some of the reforms. And so far, we are quite impressed with the reforms that were put in place, and they greatly help to enhance the credibility of the elections.
There were complaints in the last elections that the elections were tampered with, rigged in favor of the current president or the current ruling party. What is going to be different this time in order not for the perception or accusation of voter tampering and voter irregularities, you know, to be a thing of the past?
Two or three things that I've done on that one. That issue was an allegation, but has never been any substantiated here up to now. It's not that unusual that after an election, we have taken measures to further enhance the credibility of the process. One, increasing civic awareness regarding political party monitors. Well, the other challenge that we have had as Malawi Electoral Commission was the credibility of the monitors that are put by political parties to monitor the process. Some never knew what they are supposed to do. So we have always sent this appeal to political parties that if they are sending monitors, they should be monitors who can at least have a good comprehension of arithmetic and what goes on at the polling stations, so that they should be able to give credible and fair reports to their masters about the process at the centers. That aside, the Malawi Electoral Commission is taking a further step to plan and organize the training of trainers for political party monitors, and the parties within themselves cascade the training down even up to the center level. And the other thing that we're putting in place is that when we are conducting training of our people who work in the polling stations, we have opened it up to all monitors of political parties. So they become and are being embraced as part of the process. So the training given to the registration staff is also given to the monitors, so that come tomorrow on the polling day, they should be able to say, we were there during the training. They said this thing should be done in this way. Apart from that, we have even designed our results sheet so that instead of just having the results written in Arabic numerals, we are also having them written down in words. So if somebody has gotten 400 votes, you have 400 in figures, but at the same time, besides that one, you will have 400 in words, just to ensure that we enhance the credibility of the process.
Sangwani Mwafulerwa is the spokesman for the Malawian Electoral Commission. He spoke with me from Lilongwe. Meanwhile, Malawi has launched a six-month-long trial for a new typhoid vaccine. It becomes the first African country to try the vaccine being produced in India, where it was also tested. The trial targets at least 24,000 children of up to 12 years of age in typhoid-prone areas of Blantyre. For VOA, Lamek Masina reports from the Malawian commercial capital, Blantyre.
The trial vaccine follows a study by medical research NGO Malawi Liverpool Welcome Trust in conjunction with Malawi's Ministry of Health. The study started in 2016 in densely populated Ndilandi Township in Blantyre. Melita Gordon is a lead researcher at Malawi Liverpool Welcome Trust. She says the new vaccine proved more effective than older typhoid vaccines, which have been there for decades.
Which is linked to a protein, and that makes it much more efficacious, and it gives what we call immunological memory, so the vaccine lasts for a long time, and it's even effective in very young children.
She says Malawi qualified to carry the first trial in Africa because of its prevalence on the typhoid cases.
In Malawi, we've had an outbreak since about 2011, 2012. It's multi-drug resistant. We've seen hundreds and hundreds of cases in the hospital here. We estimate that we are between 100 and 200 cases per 100,000 of the population per year, which puts us into the bracket of a high incidence of typhoid and very much in need of a vaccine.
Health authorities say typhoid is an acute illness associated with a fever caused by the bacterium called Salmonella. Symptoms include stomach pains, headache, and loss of appetite. Modesta Mwangomba is the senior nursing officer at Ndilandi Clinic in Blantyre. It is one of the healthy facilities where the vaccination exercise is taking place.
We are proud to be chosen as one of the pilot area, because we know that even that is going to reduce the workload here, because most of the children will not be suffering from typhoid. That means part of the conditions that we meet here has been reduced.
The six-year-old boy, Gordon Kondowe, was the first child to get the vaccine at Ndilandi Health Clinic on Wednesday. His father, Christopher Kondowe, escorted him. He says most of the time his child was suffering from malaria-related diseases, but every time he took him to the hospital for malaria tests, he was found to be negative and later learned that it was typhoid. So that's why he has brought his child here for vaccination. He says he is happy that his son will not suffer from the disease anymore. The government says it will follow up on the beneficiaries in the 3 years. Elsewhere, researchers say the vaccine has also just undergone efficacy studies in Europe, where it had an effectiveness rate of 87%. Parallel studies have also been conducted in Kathmandu, Nepal, and Dhaka in Bangladesh, with funding for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Within a few years, a final assessment will be done, the results of which will determine if the drug should be made available on a larger scale. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
With your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
Welcome back. The UN Refugee Agency is calling on Rwandan authorities to investigate police culpability in the deaths of at least 5 Congolese refugees during a recent protest of food ration cuts. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The deadly confrontation took place when some 700 Congolese refugees from the Kiziba refugee camp were demonstrating outside the UN Refugee Agency's office in Karongi in western Rwanda. UNHCR spokeswoman Cecile Puy says the situation got out of hand after police reportedly used tear gas to disperse the protesters and shots were fired. She says that resulted in several deaths and injuries among both the refugees and members of the police force.
We regret that our continued appeals for maintaining calm and restraint were not heard. This tragedy should have been avoided. Disproportionate use of force against desperate refugees is not acceptable. UNHCR calls on authorities to refrain from further use of force and to investigate the circumstances of this tragic incident.
Puy blames much of the unrest on underfunding, which is severely affecting humanitarian operations in Rwanda. She tells VOA, lack of money forced the World Food Program to reduce food rations for refugees by 10% in November, followed by another cut of 25% in January.
These people are not only desperate about the lack of food, they're also desperate because of the lack of perspective. Some of them have been there for 20 years. There is very little hope for them. There is a great sense of despair. Many of them have been born in camp and see no future.
Kiziba refugee camp hosts more than 17,000 refugees from the Democratic Republic of Congo, more than 173,000 refugees from the DRC and Burundi live in 6 camps in Rwanda. Puy says she fears more violence could be in the offing if refugee needs are not met. She notes the UNHCR has received only 2% of the $99 million appeal for humanitarian operations in Rwanda this year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Impuga and music from our African collection. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Juna, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. But first, music has the power to entertain us, move us, and sometimes inspire us to change the world. The link between politics and music is a key theme of a festival about the turbulent 1960s. It was sponsored by New York's famed Carnegie Hall, where Bob Dylan, Judy Collins, and scores of other musician activists took the stage. For this report, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with festival organizers and international artists who combine music and social change in their work and lives.
That's We Shall Overcome, an African-American gospel song that became the unofficial anthem of the civil rights movement during the early 1960s. Some say its emotional power helped sway President Lyndon Johnson into supporting landmark legislation for racial equality. And that's Snarky Puppy, the contemporary fusion supergroup founded and led by Michael League. League is passionate about progressive social causes such as Black Lives Matter and the Me Too movement. He produced a sold-out concert for Carnegie Hall's 60s Festival that featured many musician activists from that era and this.
I wanted to celebrate the fact that in my country, we still have the right to speak our minds. Music is a very, very powerful force. And when a songwriter can cleverly state something, it gets in you in a different kind of way, and it can really influence people and change minds for the better, you know?
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam.
One song that radicalized many minds was Bob Dylan's The Times They Are A-Changin' from 1964. David Crosby, a featured artist in the Carnegie concert, is known for his mid-60s stint with the Byrds, and later with Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And like Dylan, Crosby began his career as a folk musician.
Now, folk music used to be mass media. The troubadours in Europe in the Middle Ages were the ones who spread the news. Say, you know, hey, it's 12 o'clock and all's well, or it's 12:30 and you just elected an imbecile to be president and we're in trouble.
The counterculture anthem, Ohio, is a case in point. Neil Young, one of Crosby's bandmates, penned it in rage soon after four unarmed college students were killed by Ohio National Guard troops at a demonstration against the Vietnam War.
This summer I hear the drumming for dead in Ohio.
Today, Crosby remains politically active in areas such as racial justice and climate change. Still, he says that nobody wants singer-songwriters like him to preach at them.
You can slip nuggets of truth into the stream. Our job mainly is to take you on little emotional voyages, make you boogie, make you feel good, make you want to dance, and that's our main job. Now, that said, if you see something right in front of you that you can't stand, if you see four students doing their constitutional right of protest and they get shot down, killed, you have to take notice. You're not a conscious human being if you don't.
Speaking of consciousness, the widespread use of mind-altering drugs like marijuana and LSD were as much a part of the counterculture as demonstrations and protest songs. And in the acid rock genre heard here, music, politics, and psychedelics were often deeply intertwined. Today, Crosby does not advocate LSD trips, especially for people with any mental health issues.
But they do blow you loose from the past. It does do that. And psychedelics help inspire a lot of change or willingness to look at change. And they also do make it possible for you to change direction or change thought patterns pretty strongly, which is a good thing. They take your whole deck and throw it up in the air and they come down in a different order.
Fatoumata Diawara is a Malian singer-songwriter and human rights advocate and a featured performer in the 60s festival series. She sings her song, Unite, both to raise consciousness and to entertain.
In Africa, we got a lot to do, so I have a lot to say. I take my guitar and go say, okay, don't touch to my baby, don't touch to children. We need a school for them, no matter which color. Your blood is not better than mine. Music make that because the connection is direct and keep fighting for love, to trust to more how music can change everything.
Perhaps it can, but perhaps it can't. As Clive Gillinson, Carnegie Hall's executive and artistic director and the originator of the 60s festival, put it, it's not that anything ever gets solved in human beings. One can be on a pathway to making things better, but it's not that the story is ever completed. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. We start with football, where 2015 African Champions League semi-finalist Al-Merrikh of Sudan suffered a shock elimination from this year's competition after being knocked out by Township Rollers of Botswana. Despite losing 2-1 in Sudan, Rollers advanced as 4-2 aggregate winners. Rollers will now meet Young Africans of Tanzania in the next round. Malodia Alga of Algeria are also through to the last 32 of the African Champions League after thrashing Otoho in Congo-Brazzaville 9-0. The 1976 African Champions is through as 9-2 aggregate winners. Malodia's Hichem Nekachi netted 4 goals. Also safely through are two-time winners Esperance of Tunisia and fellow North Africans Etente Setif of Algeria. Moroccans Difa El Jadida, who came into the match with a 10-0 win over Benfica of Guinea-Bissau, this time failed to score as the game in Guinea-Bissau ended goalless. The next round will get underway next month with fixtures on March 6th to 7th and March 16th to 18th. Meanwhile, debutants Desportivo Neifang of Equatorial Guinea, Energy of Benin, and La Manche of Congo-Brazzaville reached the last 32 of the African Confederation Cup after Tuesday's preliminary round second-leg fixtures. The progress of Energy was the most dramatic as they scored deep in the stoppage time, hold Haifa 1-1 in Guinea and win 2-1 on aggregate. La Manche scored the only goal of the tie to eliminate AS Tanda of Ivory Coast in Port Noir. Neifang also won 1-0, giving them victory over New Stars of Cameroon on away goals rule after trailing 2-1 from the first leg this month. Elsewhere, El Masri of Egypt, APR of Rwanda, Belzdad of Algeria, Cape Town City of South Africa, Petro Luanda of Angola, Port Louis of Mauritius, and Simba of Tanzania were other overall winners. Guinean side Haifa, who were African champions 3 times and runners-up twice during the 1970s, wiped out the first-leg deficit against Energy after only 11 minutes through Abubakar Kamara. But with the return match in Conakry seemingly destined for a penalty shootout, Jean-Marie Sanigiri leveled 8 minutes into additional time to earn Energy a meeting against Enyimba of Nigeria in the next round. Since AC Leopards surprisingly won the 2012 Confederation Cup, Congo-Brazzaville's clubs have been largely disappointing in the African equivalent of the Europa League. So the success of La Mancha over Tanda through a 29-minute Guy Mbenza goal brought a welcome change of fortune for the nation. In the round of 32, they will meet Al Ahly Shendi of Sudan. Pedro Asu was the match winner for Neifang in Bata, scoring after 29 minutes to eliminate New Stars, the latest in a long line of Cameroonian failures in African club competition. Neifang's reward is a matchup with daring club Motema Pembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo, winners of the now-defunct Africa Cup Winners' Cup in 1994. Ludovic Lafaudre was the individual star of the day, scoring a hat-trick for Port Louis of Mauritius as they romped to a 4-1 win over Nganzi of the Comoros to advance a 5-2 overall. APR, Cape Town City and Simba beat the opponents a second time as they ousted Anse Reunion of the Seychelles, Young Buffaloes of Swaziland and Djibouti's Gandamari Nationale, respectively. And finally, in tennis, unseeded Daria Kasatkina shocked Wimbledon champion Gabina Muguruza to set up a Dubai duty-free championships final against holder Elena Svitolina. The 20-year-old Kasatkina saved three match points in her 3-6, 7-6, 6-1 victory over second seed Muguruza. Number one seed Svitolina eased past former world number one Angelika Kerber 6-3, 6-3. The Ukrainian is looking to become just the third woman after Belgian Justin Henin and America's Venus Williams to win back-to-back Dubai titles. Svitolina had five breaks of serve against double Grand Slam winner Kerber, wrapping up victory in just 85 minutes. Russia's Kasatkina dropped the first set against Muguruza, but saved 9 of 12 break points and broke the Spaniard five times thereafter. And that's it for this edition of Netland Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Feeling the way that she did move. Seeing the mood is right, and I'm ready to take you on. See, baby, don't run me. I know what to do. Me and you by outside. Yeah. Tonight, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it by your side. Said, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it. Rocking now, rocking now. Make my body wanting now, wanting now. The way she break it down, break. Make my body hungry now, hungry now.
The way she wind up, oh, oh, the way she break down, oh, oh, the way she wind up, oh, oh, I swear the way she break down, oh, oh, the way she wind up, oh, oh, I said the way she break down, oh, oh, the way she wind up, oh, oh, I swear the way she break down. Smoke, oh, say, small girl with a big something, so she got the boy, me want something. Techno a rhyme, no long shouting, so we did. I shoot harder than Van Damme, harder than Van Damme.
Say me bust like a shotgun, I touch a girlfriend, and she did go like a network. Say,
girl, I want you to know, say, your body is so fine, and I know they for a holla. Girl, you will, say, you know, balaba. Girl, you say, 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 I want to touch you all night. Girl, you they make me feel right. Techno me and rhyme just to smile. Say, girl, you got one man, you got say.
Make my body wanting now, wanting now. The way she breaking down, breaking down. Make my body hungry now.
sedro na dwefa mfuni ne dama koma so girl I wanna love you to the end of time me yo bone cross so twema so yeah so don't be surprised if I kill myself all in the name of love me and I may be pair will let me pay the price so I dream you see me team why I'm a feel rough beauty lies in the eyes of beholder oh hunty girl I'm sober and kind of life and I'm be chasing my dodo on the sofa to see I'm irresponsible me born more vice a soldier jina won't want kind of winnie brand your name a soldier can be betrayed
just you know mama go
them a drop down,
drop down.
And all the ladies just the holla say,
holla say.
Them no no say what holiday. If you don't so you take a busy make you know they fall.
No they fall.
This not a song for the dancer. The way you move your body, girl, it be like say,
it be like say.
You no no say what holiday. Now the way you they do the things you do.
Oh.
It be like say you get plans for me and you.
Oh.
If I put it on you, you put it on me. What
oh.
A man can do, a woman can do so. If you do me, I do you. Man, no go vest up on the dance floor. Man, no go vest, touch me, I touch you. Man, no go vest,
you say.
Man, no go vest,
I say.
Man, no go vest.
If you do me, I do you. Man, no go vest, step on the dance floor. Man, no
so
go vest.
So won't you give it to me?
I go give it to you.
So make you give it to me some more.
Some more.
You get to see the do me, do me. So make you give it to me, give it to me. You get to see the do me, do me. So make you give it to me some more.
Oh.
I say, you get to see the do me.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. In recent weeks, major international non-governmental organizations, NGOs, such as Oxfam Great Britain, Plan International Charity, and Save the Children have faced with allegations of sexual misconduct by their staff either in Haiti or in Chad. These organizations have now apologized for these activities, which they claim had been reviewed before, but others said they were cover-ups. And donor governments who have been funneling money through NGOs are now asking for greater accountability. Despite these failures, no one should be in any doubt that NGOs perform an important service in the delivery of humanitarian assistance in many troubled areas. They are the organizations which can make certain that crucial humanitarian assistance are delivered to the vulnerable groups in many conflict areas. On Friday, 23 major international organizations signed a letter expressing their sorrow for these allegations of sexual misconduct. Some of them have involved use of prostitutes and others abuse of young children. Now, as these NGOs undertake their own internal review, and as donor governments look carefully as to what they are doing, one should not forget that there are other aspects of the role of NGOs in Africa, for example. In many instances, governments prefer to funnel their humanitarian assistance through international NGOs, who in turn themselves create local NGOs. And also, owing to the fear of corruption in these countries, these international NGOs are fearful of bringing in the governments into their activities. So it is often the case that when donor governments give the money to international NGOs, the host government may not even know the full amount of money given to these international NGOs. In many other cases, it is even difficult for host government to know the specific activities of these NGOs, again because they are so jealous of their independence. So these international organizations should also be sure that the heads of international NGOs should know that the activities are being closely monitored. There is yet another aspect which has affected many African countries. That is the issue of duty-free permission. Of course, it is natural that to enable these international NGOs to do their duties, they must have free duty privileges. But there are suspicions that in some instances, there needs to be some form of control. So all these reviews which are taking place now, which are mandatory, should incorporate relations with all governments, not to get them to interfere in the performance of local international organizations like NGOs, but to have a kind of regulatory practice where they will know what they are doing in the country. So this is an opportune moment. That's why we regret these sexual abuses. We acknowledge the valuable activities of NGOs, but also that they could not operate free without some regulatory practices, such as proper conduct. Let's hope that these changes will make it far more effective for these NGOs to continue their valuable humanitarian assistance. I thank you.
And that was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Mr. Zoniak, we say thanks for joining us. And on a programming note, I will be away on a special assignment in the next couple of weeks. And remember, as the elders say, if a blind man says, let's throw stones, be assured that he has stepped on one. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Maritime security in Senegal got a boost this month with the addition of two patrol boats provided by the United States. In a ceremony at the Dakar Naval Base, U.S. Ambassador to Senegal, Tulanebo Mushingi, noted that the true prosperity of a maritime nation requires good maritime stewardship. The illicit trafficking of people and narcotics causes harm to our societies. Illegal fishing and the illicit traffic of goods and marine pollution are causing damage to our societies, said Ambassador Mushingi. Solutions to these ills cannot be implemented by a single government entity or even by a single country. Maritime insecurity in strategic places such as the Gulf of Guinea can affect us all. In addition, those engaged in illicit activities in the maritime field will use borders to avoid prosecution. For these reasons, we must work together in the maritime domain. We all benefit from efforts to help build the capabilities of our maritime partners. To assist Senegal in maritime protection, the United States turned over to Senegal's Marine Nationale two 38-foot Defiant-class Metal Shark patrol boats. The vessels delivered this month are the fourth and fifth patrol boats turned over to the Senegalese Navy as part of a six-vessel package valued at $5 million. Through annual exercises and training engagements, Senegal and the United States continue to strengthen each other's maritime forces, the ambassador noted. Through a sustained commitment to the annual Africa Maritime Law Enforcement Program engagement, Operation Junction Rain, Senegal stands out in its capability to counter maritime threats such as illegal fishing, illicit trafficking, and piracy, and as a regional leader in training neighboring partners in these capabilities. As we have seen with recent maritime activities with Senegal's neighbors, Marine Nationale professionals have a challenging and dangerous job, said Ambassador Mushingi. But they can do it well, day in and day out, always on watch to protect Senegal and its regional partners. The United States, he said, looks forward to continued engagement with our maritime partner, the Marine Nationale.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.